it raining? Is it snowing? Is a hurricane a blowing?
Yes, the danger must be growing, for the rowers keep on rowing, and they're certainly not showing any signs that they are slowing.
Oh, make it stop, Daddy!
Luca, does it go far enough? Quite right, sir. Stop the boat.
And I don't mean to question your parenting technique, but anybody that watches Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory and then says, I believe my kids with that guy.
You like to roll the dice, don't you, sir?
I got four of them for a reason.
These days, the comic book owns pop culture. Literature, movies, television, even music. You'll find it all in the panel of your favorite comic book. Us, we're living the comic's life. We're breaking the panel.
All right, welcome to Breaking the Panel, where we go in depth inside of all the news, all the topics, everything you can think of to discuss around the world of comic books, from TV to the back bins to the big screens. We do it all. I'm the Rock God of Podcasting, Charles McFall, and it's time to take my boy toys off the shelf. I'm going to play with the Transformers of awesome sauce, Chris Wisdom.
Yeah, I'm here to knock the bottom out of these topics.
And one of my favorite, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle 90s style, Paul Klotz.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm going to have to find, like the most dour toys to reference and silly putty of the toy world, Paul Klotz.
Not that I don't love Transformers. Why is he going to be the Ninja Turtle?
Because I thought of it in the last second. He was going to be the G.I. Joe.
Like he's like age-appropriate Power Ranger. Come on.
I'm trying to get...
Whoa.
I'm just saying.
Age-appropriate Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, sir.
Oh, I'm just saying. Yeah, you're Ninja Turtle pacifier, maybe. You don't come here with that crap.
No.
I was there. I was in the trenches. I was living it, Junior.
Excuse me. Did you own all of the original series of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle action figures?
Yeah.
Okay, so did I. Did you wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning on a regular basis to try to watch Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles on the television?
I didn't have to because it was on in the afternoon when it was syndication here.
But I was doing that at 4 years old, okay?
So the question is, did I poop my pants while watching Ninja Turtles? No, I didn't.
Wait a minute. You have children. Who the hell poops their pants at 4 years old, Wisdom?
Yeah, that's
the lesser ones, Charles. The lesser ones.
Well, sir, I'll let you know that I hate you.
Our esteemed friend Agent Franck is sitting there going, "I'm the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle. You boys need to pipe down." Except he'd have an Aussie accent, which I do not have.
Yeah, and I got enough ire for those Aussies and stealing all the good roles.
They're just criminals. I don't want to hear it. So lots of lighthearted news. I love starting it off that way. That was awesome. And it's just us this week. Ibbit is off in L.A. He is in L.A. this week at a wedding, I believe it is. So he not only won't be on the show this week, he will not be able to be at Dragon Con this weekend either. But we are going to carry on. Klotz actually was saying, and rightfully so, he's like, "Hey, you know, when's it going to be back to us boys? We have some great guests on, we have some great ladies on, but we need to just kind of sit around and talk." And I'm like, let's do that this week, since it's going to be gone anyway. And we normally fill in the spot. I'm like, yeah, why not? Let's pull the trigger. We love to get your emails. Apparently, you hate to send them to us. I don't get that part of it, but that's okay. But you can email us, breakingthepanel, that's BTP, at giantsizeteamup.com. We'd love to hear from you. I checked it today. Don't even play, man. Don't act like you sent it and get lost. I checked it today. It is not there. You didn't send it, and shame on you for that. You can also go to giantsizeteamup.com /breakingthepanel, and there's a speak pipe right there that you can leave voicemails. We'd love to hear from you. Now, we did have something that rocked the entertainment world a little bit more than Prince, a little bit more than, depending on the world you live in, the geek entertainment world. You know, it rocked it harder than Prince and David Bowie. Gene Wilder passed away this weekend.
Did indeed.
That's kind of a bad day. I think the most appropriate meme I've seen on this whole thing is F you 2016, can you just go away?
I know, right? All the greats have passed away this year.
Well, not all of them. Jeez, Charles, check the hyperbole. There's still plenty of greats out there. Okay, but
Peter Laird and Kevin Eastman are still around. Not that at least one person on the panel would know who they are, because he couldn't read at the time. So I'm saying, I'm just saying. I'm just putting it out there. I should have been the Ninja Turtles.
Somebody ate their Wheaties this morning. That is for sure. Wait till I put my boy toys away. You're in for it now.
Can you please stop calling us boy toys? I really don't want to be objectified that way.
It is really uncomfortable at this point.
Oh, well. So, hey, all right. So, Klaus, yeah, I'll let you kick off. What is your favorite memory of Gene Wilder, and what did he mean to you?
Well, you know, the thing is, I was really, like, trying to formulate my thoughts on this for the last couple of days because I knew we were going to talk about it. You know, obviously for most people who've grown up any time in the last 30 years, you know, Willy Wonka is such an iconic role. And, you know, it resonates with so many people. It's a lot of people's idea of Gene Wilder. Like, that's when you say his name, that's the first thing you think.
Yeah,
about.
Wonka, right? Yeah.
Wonka. And for many children, that is, you know, but really for me, my favorite roles were, well, the films he did with Mel Brooks. You know, so Blazing Saddles and then Young Frankenstein.
Yeah.
But also the work he did with Pryor, you know, those four films, particularly Hear No Evil, See No Evil.
Oh, See No Evil. Yeah.
I mean, that movie just makes me guffaw, like just laugh to tears, even to this day, at how absurd it is. But really, you know, the thing is, like, I discovered him in Blazing Saddles and in Young Frankenstein as a teenager, and it completely changed my perception of him. You know what I mean? Because he was so, like I said, Willy Wonka is such an iconic role. But his comedy, his comedic timing, I mean, it's just amazing. And whenever you, like, if in the last few days, you know, a lot of stories have been coming out, a lot of stories that have floated around for years have been brought up again. For example, you know, just his brilliance, like discussing the fact that on Willy Wonka, you know, that initial scene where you meet him out in front of the factory, and you know, he comes out with the cane, and then he like kind of straightens out, and he does the stumble into the somersault.
Yes,
that was all him. He came up with that. He's like, I want to do this, and they let him, and it was amazing. So
that's very, very Charlie Chaplin. Oh yeah, which I think he probably would have been a fan of.
Well, that
I don't know that he was, but I think he was.
No, that's where he was pulling it from. You know, he was directly referencing that. But what a lot of people don't realize is that nobody else really knew that was going to happen except for the director, because he had okayed it. So the on shot, you know, the on camera reactions from the children and everyone else is all 100% genuine. You know, that was, and it was such a, you know, a magical moment. It really was. It's one of the greatest moments in cinema history, I would say, you know what I mean? Because especially knowing that it was not necessarily pre-planned, it was kind of he came up with it and did it, and it, you know, it looked so incredible. But also like some other stories, like, he was never originally supposed to be in Blazing Saddles.
Really?
Yeah, they had cast a couple of gentlemen in that role before him, and he was like a last minute, like a panic replacement. Like he wanted it. He had hit Mel up to play that role, but you know, they really wanted somebody. Mel wanted somebody who was a little older, a little more leathery faced. They wanted, you know, an old drunkie. You know what I mean? And he really, really wanted to play it. And so the previous guy didn't end up working out. They looked at a few people. One guy backed out last minute because his like representation said that it wouldn't be a good look for him. You know, it could hurt his career. And then the guy they originally finally went with, he was on set for a couple of days and he had a drinking problem, which is really ironic. Because that character has a drinking problem. And he was just kind of a mess, and they had to send him home. And they're like, this isn't going to work. So he was a last-minute fill-in. And the thing is, in my opinion, I mean, most of the other performances in that film are incredible. But he helps cement that whole film, you know, like as being one of the greatest comedy films of all time and one of the most groundbreaking, amazing comedy films of all time. So, yeah, that's what I really think of. And Young Frankenstein, I mean, come on. So good.
Yeah.
Such a risk too. I mean, I know a lot of that's on Mel as well, just like the idea to go with the black and white, you know, but the timing and the just, he, you know, he co-wrote it with Mel Brooks, which not a lot of people necessarily know. He actually got an Academy Award for, the writing, the adapted screenplay. So, you know, it's just an incredible talent. He was 83 years old. And he passed from complications from Alzheimer's disease. So it's basically what I've seen a lot of. Like, Mel was on Fallon the other night, and he came out and he said, you know, it wasn't unexpected. We've expected it for some time, but it's still a shock. You know, it's one of those things. Like, everybody kind of knew it was going to happen eventually. But, you know, it's still a blow. And 2016 sucks, man. Totally sucks. It really does. Like, I think this is going to go down in history as being that year that we lost so many great artists. And I don't mean just famous people, because sometimes we get a year every once in a while where a bunch of famous people pass away. And, you know, that always sucks. But this is like, these folks are true talent. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah. Chris, what do you have?
Well, you know, obviously the producers, Blazing Saddles and Young Frankenstein, you have to appreciate those. You can't know him and his work and not know those. But my all-time favorite Gene Wilder movie is The Frisco Kid, and I don't know if it was because of him and Harrison and their relationship on the movie, their chemistry or what. I've always liked that movie. Every time it's on, I got to sit down and watch it. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it, but it's good. And then, of course, all of the stuff that he did with Pryor and Stir Crazy and Silver Streak and of course, See No Evil, Hear No Evil. So, it's so such good stuff. Because what do you mean I'm not black? I mean, come on.
Yeah, what was great about him was whenever you look at him, right? And of course, Willy Wonka, all that stuff. You could paint him in all kind of different pictures. But you look at him, he's clean cut, he's nice, he's respectable, he's somebody you would trust your kid with. He looks like the cleanest, nicest guy in comedy. And yet he stands there and holds his own with Richard Pryor, who is obviously, I mean, you look at Pryor, you can see that wild hair. You know, you see the wild look in his eyes, and he's going to say something to offend people and be funny about it. And Gene Wilder is right there with him, you know, doing those things. And
I don't mean to question your parenting technique, but anybody that watches Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory and then says, I'd leave my kids with that guy.
you like to roll the dice, don't you, sir?
I got four of them for a reason. No, you know what I'm saying, though, is he was so iconic as Willy Wonka. Because, yeah, he's a little weird, but at no point does he come off creepy, and that's hard to do. You know, that Mr. Rogers was the same way. Was he never came off creepy, and so many things involving kids can easily come off that way.
I would say, though, that in his role as Willy Wonka, he came across as a little bit terrifying. Like, the subtext that is in a lot of the scenes is that he could go at any moment. You know what I mean? Like, the mad genius who's keeping it all together, but it's like, you know, like, particularly after, I always think of the scene.
On the Chocolate River? In the boat?
Well, there's that, yeah. But I mean, yeah. I always think of the scene after the bubble room, where he's just like, you can tell he's mad. But that, you know, obviously things change. But like, I was just like, as a kid, I was like, wow, he's scary. Like, he's terrifying. but not creepy. You're right. No, I mean.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, as a kid, I was in the magic of what Willy Wonka was. As a teenager, I was really into the comedy of what Blazing Saddles and A Young Frankenstein was. And you don't think about it. Then as an adult, you go back and I was watching Willy Wonka with the kids. Like, you could really paint this movie as like a horror film if you really just really start looking at the cigarette. Maybe change the music a little bit, you know, point out something like he's a slave driver. I mean, if you really think about it, the Oopaloopas, he does not treat them well, and they live and sleep and exist in this factory. I'm just saying, it's captive labor.
Right,
so we're ruining people's mirrors. We need to stop.
If I had children, I might leave them with his Willy Wonka, but I would absolutely not leave them with Johnny Depp. So.
No, Johnny.
I understand what you're saying, but you take it to a whole new level of creepy when you say you're going to leave it with his Willy Wonka.
So, it was... It was good. Let's talk about the work that's been done. I don't know that very many of his movies have been remade. I mean, obviously, Charlie in the Chocolate Factory was remade as by... It was made as that by... what's his face you just said?
Mm-hmm. Johnny Depp.
Johnny Depp, thank you. But has any other of the movies that he's been in had a remake?
Not to my knowledge.
The producers.
Oh, right.
That's right. You're right. The producers had Nathan Lane and Matthew Broderick.
I always forget he's in the producers because I mean, obviously he's in it, but like, I always think of the newer producers and then I'm reminded.
Right. Right.
Because it's, I mean, the original producers was like his breakout. And it was well before my time. You know what I mean? And it wasn't until I was in my 20s that I even had any idea what the producers was and what it meant and, you know, everything. So.
All right. So we are going to talk about other things that make us very happy, which would be Loot Crate. So we got some other big topics coming on, but yeah, definitely Wilder was one of the greats as I get this open here and installing for time. He was amazing.
So amazing at this, by the way. This is your true talent.
I like to do the call outs, man. I like to say, look where I'm screwing up. Right here. Right there. slide a hand, except you saw me move my hand.
You just like to do it before we do it.
Pretty much. That's absolutely how
like
that goes.
That street magician that has no sleight of hand, and then you're like, what's the punchline? And then you're just done. You're like, oh, so you're just mad at this.
All right, so here we go. Your September Loot Crate. We know it has lots of great gear, lots of awesome stuff. You know it's less than $20 a month. You know it comes to your mailbox. What you really want to know is what's the theme for September. It is speed. We talked about this a little bit last week. This month's Loot Crate has high octane assortment goodies from Batman, CW's The Flash and Arrow, Battlestar Galactica, and Iron Man, and Gone in 60 seconds. So, okay. If you have, you know, they've got the Loot Wear collection. They've got the Loot Crate DX collection, which they're not telling me what they're adding to that box this month. But you do have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and get September's box. And then that's it. It's over. Make sure you head over to lootcrate.com/giant-size-team-up. Enter code Giant Size Team Up to save $3 off any new subscription.
So if you're going to throw in random action movies for a box themed speed, why not speed?
Yeah, give me a pullback bus that blows up.
A shirt that says shoot the hostage. I don't care.
Oh, but, I love you so much, Chris. Oh my goodness. Chris is my new favorite class. Work harder.
No, I'm fine with that. I'd rather.
Yes. It's such a low bar.
I'd rather just be your favorite.
Shh, you're a pretty toy. It's okay. So no. I love shoot the hostage. That'd be great. Yeah, you know, Mother Jugs and Speed was a great ambulance movie with Bill Cosby. That was a drama. Even in his early days of comedy, he was doing a drama there. But it's really fun, and that would have been cool. What are other Speed-related movies that we could throw in instead of Gone in 60 Seconds?
Speed 2?
Oh, shut up. That's not even a movie. That's horrible is what that was. That's the movie that taught me the term money grab. Well, there's crap, every time I think I want to lose it, but there's, I don't know, screw it. If you know what, you can hashtag Speedbox and we will find that and read that next week. If you want to put it on Twitter, Facebook, and everywhere else that does hashtags, we will see.
I don't know that that's a good hashtag.
Speed crate?
It's one of those things where we're going to find out it's some strange sexual act and then we're going to be like, oh no.
Sorry, everybody. We didn't mean to tell you to do that one. You know, that you're right though, Klotz. FTH, we try to do some hashtags. I'm like, the rule of hashtagging is keep it simple, which doesn't work anymore because everybody's grabbed the simple ones. So at one point we threw out tag it hashtag FTH, and I went to search hashtag FTH. It can mean a whole bunch of things for the homies. There's some others that are very offensive that it can actually mean. So I was like, yeah, we can't use that hashtag anymore.
What was there was one with Susan Boyle, right? That was like, it was so bad. Like, it was their advertising campaign for her. And I wish I could remember what it was, but it was hilariously bad. And it was just like, so, you know, unfortunate that that's what they chose. Cause you know, it was rough, but yeah. There's some rough hashtags.
Okay. I don't know if this is what you're thinking of, but this is Susan Boyle's PR. This is it. All right. It's hashtag Susan Album Party. Yeah. Except it's Sus Anal Bump Arty. Sus Anal Bum Party is what you could say. That is so unfortunate. Oh, wow. How do you not just stop and look at it for a second? Oh, yeah, Susan Album Party. That's woo!
An album cover, Mr. Connery.
wait. Now, okay, we never went off on a tangent, but we have to. This is hilarious. So, number one, these are the top five. Well, I mean, you know, ratings being whatever they are, people are just saying these are funny. The top five worst ones. McDonald's had a hashtag McD Stories, and it was McDo Stories is what it came out. So there was that one. I can't tell what this one is supposed to be. I shop at Waitrose. It's Waitrose. And they're supposed to use the hashtag.
Hag tag.
Waitrose Reasons. And okay, this didn't turn out to be as funny as they looked like at first. The McD one was funny. But yeah, Susan Anal Bum Party. That's what we want. Sue's Anal Bum Party. All right, moving on, we're going to diversify our conversation. Now, we've touched on this a few different times, right? We've talked about changing, or not changing, but adding a new Iron Man character that's female. We talked about the Lady Thor. We've talked about the gay Iceman. We've talked about a whole bunch of different things. But we haven't actually talked about the concept of diversity and what it's doing to films and TV. And Chris, you thought this was a good week to do this.
Yeah, and I'm not upset about what it's doing to TV and films and comics. I'm upset, and that's my thing. On this topic, I'm just upset, and I'm upset at the fan reaction. And I know it's not all the fans, and I know it's not even a majority of the fans. It's a vocal minority, but the problem is they are getting far too much press, just like vocal minorities get in all forms of media, no matter what their opinion is. And, okay, everybody needs to take a step back and understand perspective and where you're sitting in the world and understand where you've come up in the world. And when you have a problem with a black Spider-Man because Spider-Man's not black, he's white. When you have a problem with a black Mary Jane because she's a white girl, that's the way it's supposed to be. If you want a black character, it needs to be make a brand new black character. That's such a horrible opinion to have, because when you don't understand that that that's not a fair, that's not a, this, you need to have that representation, and just, it's, you shouldn't look at it as co-opting established characters just to satisfy racial minorities, especially considering at this point in America, white people are the racial minority. But what you need to understand is this all, where all of this comes from. When these characters were created, yes, I will grant you, these characters were created as a white person. This character A, B, and C was created as a white person. But why was that? Is that because there was equality in the Marvel offices and the Timely Comics offices and the DC Comics offices? Is that because there was, they had a diverse cast of creators? A lot of black people sitting in those chairs, a lot of Mexican people, Puerto Ricans? No. Lots and lots of white people that were putting their perspective and their spin on these stories. Great stories, though they were. And now we have taken that as gospel and said, this can never change. This is never going to change from a 1930s through 1950s white man's perspective. And can we agree that there's a danger in having that perspective?
Yeah, you know, Travis Jones is obviously a really great friend of ours. And I thought about even just bringing him in, because he is kind of one of the bros here and one of the great guys that's part of the family, not just a guest on the show. But I decided to keep it the three of us just because. But he openly says, when that there was a hashtag at one point, and I get where he's coming from, but there was a hashtag at one point that said, give Steve Rogers a boyfriend. And he reacted to going, no, you know, Captain America is he has no problem with characters being gay and changing. He goes, but Captain America is mine, and you get your own hero is the words that he used. And that comes off kind of crass and rude. But what I understand what he's saying is he is a firefighter. He is very patriotic. He is one of these guys who definitely identifies with the heart and mythos of America. Right. And he's not saying, you know, we have to have everybody white, male, and this and that. He's saying he grew up idolizing this character, and this is what this character meant to him. And even the whole Hail Hydra thing really threw him off, because it changed the character that he grew up wanting to be like. And so when he saw the hashtag, and which I got, he didn't use so many words to say, because we've had many conversations about it afterwards, but he didn't use so many words to say, I feel like a group is trying to hijack a character instead of saying we need more representation. And honestly, with that particular hashtag, give Steve Rogers a boyfriend, I don't think it fits the character at all. I don't think it fits the history of it. I think it would be either pandering or worse to do that. But there is a line. I mean, everybody can have that hero. Everybody can say Thor was my hero. Leave Thor alone. People can say, you know, Iron Man is my hero. Leave Iron Man alone. It's a fine line to walk, right? Because these characters were created, as you said, Chris, by white men. I mean, let's be honest. Very, very few women even had their hands in creating these characters as they came up. The iconic, the big ones. Is all white men, and things do need to change, but I think there are ways to do it. Lady Thor is not just, oh, Thor was born a girl, now we changed it. No, they actually moved a nice storyline and brought Jane Foster in for that, right?
Yeah, if I can jump in here.
Go ahead.
You actually have that's a great point right there. I've expressed this many times. First of all, before I say any of what I'm about to say, because I get flack for this stance all the time, and I know, Chris, we're not going to completely agree here. I get flack for the stance I take on this topic pretty often, but I very much support diversity in media. I very much want there to be representation for people of all walks of life, regardless of race, religion, you know, sexual orientation, all of it. Like, there should absolutely be characters out there that represent the people who are in this world. And I agree with that. The issue that I have is kind of like what you just said there, is there's a difference between taking the mantle of a character such as Captain America or Iron Man or even Batman, you know, or something like that, and giving it to someone else and saying, okay, yeah, well, you're the new Iron Man, for example, but you might be a black guy. You might be a woman. You might be, you know, anybody. I'm fine with the mantles being passed off. So, like, in the case of Spider-Man, I like Miles Morales. Hmm. I think it's a great character. I would like the fact that there's a number of different takes on Spider-Man. it might, for me though, the thing is, Peter Parker himself is a white kid. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. And I'm even fine with Marvel saying, okay, well, you know what? We've told that story. Let's take some time to focus on someone else. Let's put, you know, let's, and they have. I mean, the Spider-Verse is actually a pretty good example of how they've diversified to a pretty good level, and those characters are compelling. They've shown that you can take a mantle and spread it out and let it be representative and have it still have great stories. You know what I mean? I mean, there's a number of female spider characters now that aren't exactly Spider-Man, because right, obviously that doesn't make a ton of sense.
Right. But
they're different variations on it, and they're a lot of fun. As a matter of fact, you know, there's a couple of books where they all come together, and it's really fun. You know what I mean? Yeah, I know. Crazy. We're going to move on. We're going to be adults here, Chris. My, as I've said before, and most recently when we discussed this, I said pandering, like you just said, Charles, is my big beef. I think it's insulting to minorities or, you know, people of different ethnicities, religions, sexual orientations, when you subvert an existing character that is firmly entrenched in everybody's mind, and you take your Steve Rogers and try to make him something that he hasn't been for the last 60 years.
Yeah.
When you take a Peter Parker and make him something he hasn't been, and so on.
As you have grown the story, as you've rebooted the story, as you've done the new movies, you know, all these opportunities for change, things have changed. And as the character grows, it becomes something bigger than the creators ever intended.
Before you jump in, yep, Chris, I think the more brave choice is, sadly, in opposition to what you just said, Chris, is to create new characters that should be just as compelling. I mean, I wouldn't want... People would hit the roof if Amanda Waller had been cast as a white woman in Suicide Squad. Because that whole character is kind of built up around... She's a representative character, but she's badass, gangster, you know, all that, to play off that joke. One of the great things about Amanda Waller...
Walden. She owns her own bookstore.
One of the great things about Amanda Waller is that she's a take no crap, get down to business, makes the hard choice character. And her ethnicity has never been like in the front of who she is, because she could be anything else. But she is a character that is prominent, you know, in a certain story. Mm-hmm. And she is, you know, represents a minority, and changing that would kind of like change a lot of people's perception of the character. I think it's really awesome.
I think it would change the character. And that, I think that's the heart of the discussion, is changing the ethnicity or the sexual orientation or anything else about them. Does it change the character? I mean, if you cast, let's go full on offensive here. If you cast Amanda Waller as a white man, it 100% changes the character. She's badass because she is a woman. She's badass because in a world that is portrayed where women are soft and men are the backstabbers, in a world where it's a good old boys club, and they even took some subtle steps to show that in her dinner and in the presentation she had, even in the war room, that it's a good old boys club. And in this world that does represent our real world, she's making her own way, and she's tougher and meaner than all of them. And changing her from her ethnicity or her sex changes that character, and that's not something you should ever do.
For me, one of the great things about that character, too, is that in none of the media I've seen with her present is her validity as a leader ever. Like, her validity and her methods is questioned because she's crazy. But she's never, like, nobody looks at her and says, oh, you're just a woman. And nobody looks at her and says, oh, you're a black woman. And so, you know, what do you know? That's never, she's always just this, you know, badass, like, I'm going to take care of business attitude. And I appreciate that. And I think that's great. And I want to see characters like that. I want to see more characters like that. I want people, I really want, because I, as a straight, white, middle-class American, I understand that people need to see characters that represent them. I want them to have those characters, but I want them to have their characters. I don't want them to feel like in order to get a character that represents them, somebody has to take a pre-existing character and make it for them, you know, like change it for them, because that feels disingenuous to them.
All right, Chris, what you got? What you got, Chris?
So to Amanda Waller's point, it's interesting because with the new 52 Amanda Waller, we did see pushback because Amanda Waller went from this heavy set black woman to a very svelte, athletic, Jim Lee 90s looking black woman. And there was pushback from certain segments of the community saying, why was this change necessary? Nobody needs to see Amanda Waller as a sexual object. Why?
Right.
So there's already that. The problem with creating new characters is we see it every year. How many new series are launched? Let's just talk Valiant Comics. Let's talk Milestone Comics. They don't succeed. Some of the characters may be popular enough to port over, like Static X. But, I mean, prior to that, when you're looking at characters, to me, that's pandering. When you have to create a character specifically for the community. And it's not always pandering, but the problem is when you have those characters that you create and who comes from Wakanda? Is it the Panther that comes from Wakanda, or is it the Black Panther that comes from Wakanda? Isn't it Black Lightning? Isn't it Night Thrasher to also indicate Dark Knight Black? I mean, those are inherent problems, too. And going back to the Travis discussion, the problem with some of the things that we say, and I'm going to come at this, I'm going to give my minority half the floor here, and just my white boy's going to shut up. But
right.
the problem with saying things like my character, or that's not my Captain America, or that's not my Batman, that is that very fine line of coded language. You know what I mean? That we have to be very careful when we use those phrases in any context, because we are already coming from a position of power, whether we want to acknowledge that or not. I'm not just talking
white men and all that jazz.
Yeah, white privilege. I'm not, but it's true. It's very true. It's like we just talked about. All of these characters were created by white men. So there is no, when we say, well, why can't we take a black character and make them white? The problem with that is because then you are coming from a position of the haves and saying, I have to have more, versus the other way is the have-nots saying, can we get a seat at the table, please? And to Captain America specifically, there's layers to that topic. There's layers to that topic. I'm going to go ahead and go into the Iceman 2 and why I disagree with Ellie on that whole topic, because...
Okay.
Love Ellie to death, and I agreed with most of her position on the Iceman problem. But the thing that broke for me was when she said that's not how gay people are outed. Too often, that's exactly how gay people are outed. Like, when you tell me that it's not an adolescent teenager just saying it out in front of people that weren't privileged to that knowledge, we just saw it in the Olympics with the whole Grindr deal. A reporter, who was that, in Spain? A Spanish reporter? That went on Grindr, found all these Olympic athletes, and gave enough information. I cannot believe that so-and-so, or that athlete X is on Grindr looking for gay sex when he comes from such and such a country and he's such and such a height, and this is his event. I mean, you see it happen. People are outed that way constantly. So for anybody to say that's not how it happened, so that's not a fair representation of our lifestyle, that's 100% inaccurate.
Now, for those who don't know, just to fill in, we're talking about last summer when there was it was in the newer X-Men comics, I think, where Jean Grey. Yeah, Teenage Jean Grey read Iceman Bobby's mind and outed him, and in a very mean way, outed him as gay. And it was, I think it was intended to start conversations, and I think it was it was Marvel trying. And while it was heavy-handed, and I could see why the gay community didn't go, wow, this is awesome, that's the point that you're talking to, Chris, is that's the event that happened. And I agree with you, there are many times that it happens. But let me go back to what you're talking about with my character.
Go ahead. Sorry. Yeah. Because then that all leads into the Captain America. I was doing that more as a show perspective, that there's, you have to look at things from different, you always have to look at things from all angles. And it's so go ahead right. on what you were saying. I'll get back into the Captain America portion.
Well, that's exactly where we're going, is Captain America. the law there, man, there's such a thin line. So when somebody grows up, and I'm going to use Travis as an example as well. I can even use you as an example. I took Turtles away from you and gave it to Klotz, right? Now, you didn't really get mad, but you put on a great show there about what it meant to you. Why can't I be the Ninja Turtle? Yeah, my turtle, right? That's people like Travis and the rest of the world. There, you grow up going, this is my character. This is the person I identify with. And I want to even take it a little deeper for myself and say, this is the person or the character I see parts of them in me. And that makes me feel better about myself. For sake of argument, Travis is over here going, no, wait, you can't make Captain America gay. That's my Captain America. And somebody over on the other side is like, that's not cool, man. He's all of ours and blah, 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 blah. Where do we draw the line of saying, okay, you don't change this because that's taking from somebody else? Or where do we draw the line and say, you can change this and it gives to somebody without taking?
Before Captain America, the first Avenger, eliminate the MCU from your mind. And you give me from Captain America's inception until the MCU births him, Captain America's love interest. You give me as Lois Lane. Give me as Mary Jane.
I was actually
Peggy Carter.
Nope.
I was actually just going to make the comment that for decades he didn't really have one.
Exactly.
What?
No. And there's no, and that's the thing. And so, and even if you can show me, you know, five issues where he shows an interest, you know what I say to you? I say to you, this is a soldier from World War II era where it was not okay to be openly gay. And maybe the guy was brought up to have conflicting emotions. And it goes back to a previous show where I said making characters gay is the easiest way to show diversity because it's an internal change. It's not an external change. It's something. So I'm the guy that says sexuality is the least of those things because I don't give a crap about anybody's sexuality. But you look at the time period where he grew up. You look at the military organization where he came up in. And I'll tell you right now, even with Don't Ask, Don't Tell being the law anymore, there are still soldiers that I know that are not comfortable with coming out. They know that it would be detrimental to their career. Now, the problem that I had with the hashtag is that's not a real social issue. I'm tired of the yeah. petitions and the hashtags because I don't get six nuggets with my Wendy's 99 cent order. I want six nuggets, not five. You know, it's to that point, and that's ridiculous. I have a problem with it being in the MCU, when you're trying to do that, that's you trying to pander because he has clearly got a love interest in Peggy Carter and then Sharon Carter. That's already established. I'm sorry. And then if you take it back to the comic book side, the problem I have with making it Bucky is where that relationship started. That's like making Batman gay with Robin, and you're taking
right.
You are then putting the gay community in a position where that is not a relationship that they want to have reflected with a guardian and his underage ward, and that's where feelings develop. No, I don't think that's the way to do it either.
Right. That's yeah. No, I agree with that.
But so there's two arguments there. I mean, now that we want to dive into just nitpicking Captain America, with the Hail Hydra, the same argument extends that I said, it's like, you want me to believe that old Jewish white men back in the day that they created Captain America, one made him a Nazi or made him gay. You know, I'm not saying you can't, but then why you go off on this next thing before you do that. My solution is we have multiverses. My problem with if you made Captain America gay, okay, if you did in a way Chris talks about where it's a very subtle, and he's struggling and he slowly starts talking about his feelings because gay men marry and get interested in women all the time to hide who they are. Or I know gay men who actually, not that they like women where they're not gay, but it wasn't that they hated them. It's a hard, confusing thing to get into this, not for the show. But my point is, if you did it the way Chris said, I could go, okay, that's good development of the character. Or give me the multiverse where Captain America didn't come up through World War II and get frozen, where he came up differently and his history is different and he's openly gay. And it's a win-win, right?
But it's not, is it? Because if he didn't come up that way, then he's not Captain America. So now you're saying you can be Captain America, but you can't be Captain America.
Absolutely. Have you played From the Hell? From the Hell Carries the Show. Have you played MAA lately? We got a billion Captain Americas, right?
I think we're getting bogged down in minute details here at this point. For me, okay. So We have a few examples in recent years of the way I think it's done right. I'm going to point to Kamala Khan and Ms. Marvel as being the right way to do things. You take a mantle, you create a new character for that mantle, and you put them out there and you support them. And at this point, she's thriving, right? She's a popular character. You know, there a lot of people feel represented by her. Not just Muslims either. You know, there's Muslims, there's women, there's Muslim women, teenage girls. She hits a lot of, you know, she hits a lot of different subsets.
And it's so good. It is so well written.
And that's the thing. That's what I want. I want stuff like that. I want, you know, characters that are. And I also don't mind if you go back and you dig through the annals of comic book history and you find a throwaway character that showed up at one point or was in a couple of stories at different points that was never really fully fleshed out, and you pull them out and you kind of mold them a little bit more into a more complex character, and it happens to align with something like this because you want more representation. I'm fine with that. The issue is when you take a tentpole character like Captain America and you have 60 plus years of content around this character, and then, you know, you try to say that they're a member of Hydra, or the boyfriend thing. What you're doing is you're telling people that, like, out of all of that content, this major plot point and this major element of this character never appeared. You know, in the thousands of pages you've spent with that character, that was never, you know, presented as a part of them in the past. That's where I feel like that's what you're asking too much. You know, you're asking people to just kind of like gloss over decades of content. You know, it's different. It's distinctly different. But however, when you take the mantle of Captain America and you let Falcon step into it, and he takes his own stance on it, he's a different person. He does it his own way. He's still Captain America. You know, he still represents something. He still represents the ideals of that character, but he's a different person. He has his own story. He has his own representation, all of that. I don't see a big problem with that. I mean, there are people out there who have a problem with that, and they're racist. Right. Oh, yeah. And they're racist, you know, a-holes. I'm sorry. I'm just going to say that. If you can't accept that a mantle like that, I mean, you know, like POTUS, you know, President of the United States of America. Hey, we have a black president. Get over it. You know what I mean? Like, it's a mantle. It's a position of authority, and it's a position of inspiration, too. It's a great leader. And in that case, I think Falcon was an excellent step in. You know what I mean? Mantles, I think you can move around, and Spider-Man can be a Hispanic kid, you know, a black kid, a whatever. It can be Spider-Man can be a girl. I mean, we'll probably not call him Spider-Man, which we haven't for obvious reasons, but, like, you know, you can do these things, and you can still tell compelling stories, and you can still explore these issues. You absolutely can. And I do see the value, like, Chris, in what you were saying about, like, the gay angle with Captain America. I see that it's kind of threaded there. Well, but I still think that's headcanon. You know what I mean? I think you can apply that logic and sprinkle it all through his history and everything. And I agree with what you're saying as far as, like, the era he grew up in and everything. But it's not been presented as, like, a main part of his character right along.
But neither has hetero.
Right. But that's the thing. He's always been that noble character that's kind of beyond sexuality. Like, other characters are in relationships and out of relationships and stuff over the years.
And I get that. Yeah, I agree with that. But he can't. But can't he be? Can't he be that noble character that's above relationships and still be gay? I mean, that's the thing. Is everything that you say that he can do, you can still be gay in addition to that. And my problem with my problem with almost the straw man poll argument of the Captain America was created by two Jewish guys in reaction to Adolf Hitler and Nazi Germany is two Jewish guys do not create a blonde haired, blue eyed hero to fight Nazis. You know who does? The editing department of Timely Comics. Who, when they brought him, I guarantee you, they brought a Superman-looking guy. And they're like, let's lighten that hair. Let's lighten those eyes. Because that's the America we want to represent. So even at the birth, there are the problems. Even at the birth of that character, those problems existed. And if you recognize that even your idealized characters, when they were created, if you understand where they came from, the time period and the constraints that were on creators, the limitations that were on their perspectives, and then you try to look at people from, you look at people today that are like saying, hey, A, we're not represented, and B, why can't these characters be ours, without just relying on the multiverse? Yes, Charles, I agree with you. That's the multiverse is a perfectly valid way to do it. That's how we got a black Superman. Mm-hmm. But should it require that? Should that just be the deus ex machina of diversity in comics is, oh, well, yeah, it's an alternate universe. He's okay.
Well, I think it's case by case, and I think we vote with our money. And in today's world, they took a small chance on Ms. Marvel, and it did really well because people voted with their money. And they bought it. There was no real uproar about it that I saw.
There was a bit of backlash because, like I said, there's racist a-holes out there. But
Yeah. But no real uproar as in, okay, see, I don't pay attention to those things. So for me to see it on my Facebook, that means it's hit a certain boiling point. Like to see the Captain America stuff and to see those hashtags means that enough people have been sharing it that it made its way into my circles. Because very much set my circles up to avoid racist assholes and sexist assholes and assholes in general, unless it's me, because it's my page. I can be an asshole. what if, Chris, it was Superman proper that they wanted to do? Would that change the conversation for you?
No. I'm the guy that's on the show that has sat here and said, I want Idris Elba to play Superman.
That would be so awesome.
Yeah, no. This is not a case of where you're going to find me on an opposite side of position. It needs to be handled appropriately. I agree that it needs to be handled well in the writing, but I don't see.
You said something a little while ago where you said people of minorities, they look at these characters and they say why can't this character be ours? And it's like, mm-hmm. My response to that is like, it's not so much that I want to defend the white privilege, like this is mine and you can't have it attitude, yeah. But it's like, why are you looking at what someone else has and trying to take it? Is kind of my whole thing.
Well, but it's, they're not, they're, are they taking it though? They're not trying to take it. They're trying to say, hey,
that's kind of what the attitude is. It's like, oh, look at this successful thing. I want that now.
Okay. Well, I look at it like we look at Captain America as the ideal, as the ideals of America, as the quintessential American character. And I look at the population statistics and I say, it is nowhere near a blonde haired, blue eyed white man. Is not America. So
I don't think the physical attributes of him, which is why I've stressed the mantle thing versus the individual character. Steve Rogers as Captain America, yes, is the blonde haired, blue eyed, you know what I mean?
Right. No, and I get what you're saying with mantle, and where Steve Rogers is concerned, we're talking internal versus external. You don't just make a black Steve Rogers. But again, I'm okay with a black Steve Rogers. I mean, if you go back and you look at Captain America, red, white, and blue.
I just think that's ridiculous, is what I'm saying. Like, not because I have an opposition to those characters existing and representation existing. I don't have a problem with that at all. I want that. But I think it's ridiculous to take a character like that and then just bend it. And I'm not okay with people just bending things every which way in order to make a buck or make a point or whatever. Like, that feels disingenuous to me. That's pandering by its very definition, in my opinion. And I think that is wrong. I think that it's like, it's lazy and it's ham-fisted, and it's like I just said, it's like, oh, look at this successful thing. It's that meme on the internet. It's like, you know, it shows where somebody makes it something and shows it to another person, and they hold it, and then they turn to someone else and they go, I made this. It's like, build it from the ground up and build this stuff into these characters. And it's started to be done. There are examples in comics right now of great characters that have been created in the last 10, 15 years that have interesting stories. They have interesting backgrounds, and they represent, you know, they represent all different kinds of walks of life. And they just need some time in the sun, I think. I think they need to be featured more, not just thrown as side characters that are kind of like, oh, we bring them in once in a while. Like, that's the crime, I think. is that when characters like that aren't given their own legs, you know? And yeah, what you said a little while ago as well about like Black Panther, Black Lightning, obviously that those are artifacts of a different time. And I don't think that every Black character should have their blackness as part of their identity.
You know? Right. Yeah.
Like, which is what I like about Sam Wilson, the Falcon. Now, the more modern take on it, the MCU take on it, is his race is never addressed in the MCU. He's just a soldier. He's a Black soldier, but he's just a soldier. You know what I mean? And that's not the central point to his story, but that doesn't mean that he's like a Black guy that acts like a white guy. I think he very much acts like a Black guy. Like, he's got the, you know, you can tell he comes from that ethnic background because he represents those people, the way they carry themselves, the way they talk and everything. But there's nothing about him that I feel like is pandering. You know what I mean? I think that's a good example of a character that needs some time in the sun. Next Captain America movie, you know, if we write, you know, Chris Evans and Steve Rogers out of it for whatever reason, mm-hmm. I have no problem with him stepping in as Captain America. I'll watch another 5 movies with him as Captain America because I think Anthony Mackie's great, and I think it'd be awesome. I think it'd be a lot of fun. You know, so that's what I'm saying, is it's like, mantles are fine, if I can really just come back around to my original argument. Yeah. Mantles are good, and I want them to take a mantle. I want a Black Batman at some point. You know what I mean? Like, I want to see somebody play with that. I want to see, you know, a different backstory on the character and how they came to wanting to be the Caped Crusader, how they came to wanting to protect their city, you know, Gotham. I guess Batman's intrinsically tied to Gotham, but maybe not. But you know what I mean? Like, I want to see that. I want to see a different take on that same story. I just don't want his name to be Bruce Wayne, because I think that's cheating. You know what I mean?
Leroy Jenkins.
I don't fully disagree with that premise, but my problem is you're kind of trying to have it both ways. You're like, you can be Batman, but you can't be Bruce Wayne. Being Bruce Wayne is cheating. Being Batman is okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the problem with the perspective of somebody else built that and you're trying to take it for your own is, again, those people were never at the table and given the opportunity to build it. They were never given that shot. And I'll go back to Milestone Comics. Milestone Comics and Wayne Duffy, they went under. Yes, people vote with their dollars, but you know who else has been voting with their dollars for years? African Americans, gay people, men, women of all walks, races, and creeds have been buying. So
how's that changed the statement?
No, I'm saying that they've paid in. They've paid into Captain America as the ideal. So why not? Why they've paid into Superman as that ideal. They've paid into Batman as the character. So they have skin in the game.
But okay, so the only problem with that argument that I have is we don't have access to sales data based on ethnicity or background of any sort. You know what I mean? So we can't go and look at the last 60 years of Marvel Comics, for example, and figure out who exactly
the percentage. Okay.
They absolutely exist. You know what I mean? Because we had this conversation a few months ago about how, you know, the African American community has been tapped into comic books for a long time. It's part of their culture. You know, and that's true. Growing up, I had Black friends who were into comic books just as much as I was, if not more. And they were knowledgeable and they were passionate. And it's absolutely there. But like, a lot of, you know, people talk about the white privilege thing a lot and like, oh, why is all of media white character, you know, white straight characters and so on and so forth. And it's like, because that's where the dollars are, or at least traditionally that's where they were. That is changing, you know, for various reasons. You know, the ethnic background, the percentages in this country have shifted, and in the world in general, you know, people are becoming more integrated and everything. Economic situations have changed. Absolutely. I support all of that. And like you're saying, Chris, people are buying in and have been buying in for some time. But that's not to say that the entire history of a character like Captain America or Batman, that their audience hasn't been, you know, middle class white kids, you know, white boys. You know what I mean? Because it was.
Right.
For decades, that was their core audience, and arguably still is, at least to a certain degree. Now, that doesn't mean that I support companies that aren't ready to embrace change and embrace the future. I'm just saying that you can't take 50, 60 years of continuity of something like that. I mean, they do it all the time. I know they throw stuff out the window. They change things. Like the Hail Hydra thing is like the perfect example of, oh, well, we're just – and I think the reason people are so mad about stuff like that is it's pandering. It's like they did the Hail Hydra thing to sell comic books, and it succeeded. Look at what happened.
But the story wasn't bad. That's the thing. So you guys are saying as long as the story is compelling, it's okay.
I've seen differing opinions on that, though. I've seen lots of people say that...
My problem with the story was the reveal was done entirely too soon. And I think... And it's they didn't reveal in reaction to, because we all know that comics are published and printed well in advance. Right. But I guarantee you they saw the storm coming. They knew exactly how that was going to go over. And that's why the story was written with the reveal so soon.
Right. So. You know, we could go on for days on all this because some of it's subjective. You could even argue all of it's subjective because somebody's going through different experiences and we'll have a different point of view on all the topics here. But to wrap this part up, I want to talk about the good things that we're missing, that here's where diversity works when nobody notices it happened. Okay. So I want to use Doctor Strange as an example. The internet exploded about a white woman playing the Ancient One, right? That was a split. Nothing was said about Baron Mordo being changed to an African American. Great actor.
They're not American. He's British.
Yeah.
Sorry. See, I hate political correctness because political correctness has always been African American. I guess. He's about to be, you know, trying to be funny. That's about to be a little probably across the line moments. I will hold back there. But somebody who is not of the original race of the character that was drawn. Mm-hmm. Now, we gave good reasons why he was changed, besides he's a phenomenal actor and he deserves a job. The character was a bit racist in being drawn in the first place and how he was done. But here's where, that's why it worked, is nobody noticed. Oh, now, of course, it's a character maybe you don't know about much. But there's been some other change. I talked about Deadshot. Right, in Suicide Squad, traditionally skinny white dude. We cast Will Smith, and the only few thing anybody had to say was Will Smith over Will Smith this Will Smith movie. You know, it wasn't about his race, it wasn't about the character's race. Does that mean that we have to take characters people haven't heard of? No, I'm saying let's look at what matters and what doesn't matter. And when we can have conversations about Captain America, maybe we can come to a gay Captain America. Maybe we can come to a black Captain America. Maybe we can come to a black Batman. But we have to start with the discussions we can actually have, right? The Baron Mordos and the Deadshots of the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's we obviously can't take leaps. We have to take steps, but we have to be cognizant of people that feel like the steps aren't being taken large enough or fast enough.
Right.
And we can't just dismiss their feelings. Agreed. We can't say, "Oh, quit boohooing."
Well, to support your point here, Chris, because really what kind of spurred this whole conversation. For the folks at home, Chris has wanted to address this topic for months, like literally 6 months or more. Where I want to support you completely is on the fact that the internet's response to this kind of stuff is well and truly outrageous. It is completely over the top. Like, okay, you know, I've made my stance on how I feel about the topic, but if tomorrow Bruce Wayne is a black man, I'm not going to start a petition to boycott. I'm not going to, you know, go out there and say I hate DC and I hope somebody blows up their offices, you know, none of that stuff. I might go on the internet and say, this is why I don't like this, and explain myself. I might rant a little bit, but it's not going to be because he became a black guy. It's just going to be because they just changed a character that's existed forever. And I'm certainly not going to hate anybody who's involved. I'm not going to wish ill will or death or anything like that on somebody who's involved in that process, the person who wrote it, the person who drew it, none of that stuff. I'm not going to hate on somebody who's going to represent that character in film, should it come to pass, any of that. And that is where I think we really need to step up as a community and say, you guys are flipping crazy and you need to stop. You know what I mean? Like, you need to stop responding to stuff. And we have to stop giving those people attention. That's the other thing. Every news outlet in the world now reports every time one of these little controversies pops up. Like, do you know how I found out about James Gunn supporting Zendaya as her role in the Spider-Man movie? Mm-mm. It's because it showed up on my sidebar in Facebook. So that wasn't necessarily that it had hit critical mass yet, like Charles was talking about a little while ago. No, that was because Facebook picked it up as a trending topic and decided that it needed to be presented to me so that I could, you know, either become enraged or the opposite. And it's like, how about we stop doing that? How about we stop making everything a catchy headline and spend more time talking about the base issue itself if we're going to talk about it at all, and stop. It's not like I don't want it to sound like, you know, the conversation we're having with, you know, the 60 years of Cap or Batman or whatever. It's not that I'm mad that you're taking my toy away. It's that you're just like ham-fisting it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So let's talk about the fact that, you know, there's ways to do this and we can explore this and there's absolutely opportunities. I personally like to circle back to the Spider-Man movie. I think the braver choice might have been to cast that young actress in a new character role that is the new love interest for Peter Parker. Let's make an MCU version of, you know, his love interest that is different, because there is so much tied up in those, in his two key love interests over the years. You know, they've both been portrayed relatively recently in film and people have a lot of investment in that. Let's try and explore something else. Let's go a different angle.
Could have been a perfect opportunity to bring Silk in and make Zendaya Silk. Do you know, honestly, do you know what my reaction was when I saw that that was the role she got? What is a Zendaya? That was... I had no idea who this person was. And then later that night I saw some makeup commercial. I was like, oh, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's
I thought she was a makeup girl. And then I listened to the show from last week and realized apparently she's on the Disney Channel.
Right. And that happens sometimes. I mean, how often does somebody transition out of what is generally children's television or children's movies and then becomes, you know, a star in a broader sense? That happens, you know, and maybe this is her time. Everything I've seen, people say she's fantastic, you know, that she's you know, a very capable young woman and she's going to do an awesome job. James Gunn said he met her and he was really impressed and he can't wait to see what she does.
She better be good, Tiger.
Groan. But yeah. So I guess, you know, my wrap up to this topic would be to challenge our listeners, to challenge members of the community, especially comic book fans and especially sci-fi fans. Where you see the bigotry and the hate, challenge it and bring people back to the core issues and stop focusing on the minute details per se. And stop making a big deal out of flipping everything. We can have a continuous conversation about diversity in media, and you can have your, like, Chris and I can sit here and talk to you guys all day about this, and we have differing opinions, but you'll notice there was civility here, and that's what is needed. Is civility.
Exactly, and I would love to get input from our listeners, either in email or on the Facebook page, but I don't want anybody throwing shade to Paul. I don't want anybody throwing shade to Charles or to me, because there's no reason for it. We have opinions. We have opinions based on our perspective of the world. And that's what we all have to understand, is everybody's got their own perspective and the way that they look at the world and their interactions with the world. And I guess one of the points that I've just come to is there is no such thing as true empathy, because you cannot truly understand what it's like to live someone else's life. And that doesn't matter. Charles can't understand, as a white male, can't understand what it's like to live Paul's life as a white male. There's sympathy. But 90% of the time, sympathy's for crap, because it's easy to say, I feel bad for you and move on.
You're not living up to your white privilege, Paul.
Well, we all seriously need to take those efforts to understand as much as possible. If you cannot truly understand where they're coming from, at least listen. Take the time to listen with open ears, not with a closed mind.
There you go. If you want to continue this conversation, go to facebook.com/breakingthepanel, and we'll talk to you all day long about it. It'll be awesome. So we got a few little things to talk about before we get out of here. Chris, Stranger Things.
Yeah, season 2. Woo! Officially announced. I can't even be more happy than that. 2017, so I got to wait a little bit. Wait before I binge, so I guess I'm just going to have to watch season 1 over and over and over and be okay with that. And I'll be okay with that.
That's actually not so bad. You said 2017?
Yeah, 2017.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that means they're going to get right on it. That's excellent.
Yeah, well, because I know they're going to do a time jump. I think they were talking of like a year originally, because they're going to have to make up for the aging of their the cast, and one of the main boys, I guess his voice has already dropped like several octaves, so they're doing a little bit of a time jump. I think a year is what they were talking about. So.
Yeah. Okay.
I also saw that they were saying they were going weirder and crazier in the second season. I think that's great. I think one of the things, like, not spend too much time on the topic, but one of my favorite things about Stranger Things is how it was a relative slow burn as far as all that goes. And I'm ready for it to ramp up now because I'm in, you know, and I think it was great that they didn't rush into the action, because I've definitely watched some shows over recent years where I was like, oh no, you ruined all the tension and the buildup here by just jumping into showing me the monster or whatever, or showing me, you know, everything. And then I was like, oh, you've done ruined this. A great example of that is the sci-fi show Helix. I started watching Helix a couple years ago, and like the first couple episodes are incredible. It's like, you know, there's this disease in this medical facility, and it's really, you know, it's kind of like a zombie type thing, but not quite. It's really interesting. And then they just jump to like this point where they did the big reveal on everything that was going on, and it like, the next thing I know, it was a soap opera, and I was like, what happened here? You had the first couple episodes were so good, and you ruined this. But Stranger Things is not that at all. And I can't wait to see where they go.
So my two things for Stranger Things is to satisfy the Barb faction. I think you could easily bring her back as a, because they're going to go to the Upside Down. So either a spectral Barb, or just as like a just a manifestation of her guilt for the sister. So then you can bring her back and do flashbacks easily too. And I'm sure that Eleven, in Paul's opinion, needs to be played by the girl that played Negasonic. Because we need to get that next evolution in, right?
That's in reference for the folks at home, in reference to a meme that was going around that showed Eleven, Negasonic Teenage Warhead, and then Furiosa from Mad Max.
Yeah, that was good.
It's a Pokemon evolution, and like they're like the best Pokemon evolution ever. Yeah. And I was like, that's really funny. I'm excited to see what that actress does with that role in the future, because she was great. And yeah, I'm really excited.
I want her to come back 50 pounds heavier and just be like, I've been sitting around there eating Eggos waiting for you guys to find me.
All right. And then, of course, the girl who actually played Barb on Stranger Things has been cast as CW's Archie reboot. She's going to be, I'm not going to open the links. I'm sure it's one of those that gives me ads, but
from the picture I saw, isn't it the chick that used to date Jughead? To
looks kind of like, well, the picture I see is from Stranger Things, so I don't know.
Okay.
All right. Here's some other stuff. Deathstroke is coming to Batman Clots.
Well, we don't know what it's coming to.
Oh, I thought, okay, Affleck put something. I just assumed because Affleck put it out as Batman. But
we did a short clip of what we assume is test footage of Deathstroke in all his cinematic glory. Basically, it just shows, you know, the character in the armor and the mask. We were talking before the show a little bit about how we all perceive that. I was pretty happy with it, but Chris didn't really care for it. Chris, you want to elaborate a little bit?
Yeah, I love Deathstroke as a character. I liked the guy that played him in Arrow, and the costuming was okay in Arrow. I just felt like it was a little too armory. And then this one just seems like it's the next level of it. It's an Iron Man suit to me is what it looks like. And I don't think that's going to move as freely as Deathstroke needs it to.
My initial perception of this was that it's kind of in line with the Flash costume, you know, from the DC films, where like it's very armored, and I didn't really like that at first, but it's growing on me kind of thing. You know, like I had a similar response to the Flash's costume that you had to this one, where I was like, he needs to run fast. Why does he have a giant, you know, plate on his chest? But, you know, I mean, we'll see how it all plays out. We don't know if it's going to appear in Justice League. We don't know if it's going to appear in the upcoming Batflick.
Batman, yeah.
Yeah, so there's really no details at all, but it looked good, even if it's not really the style that you – could you at least agree with that?
No, yeah, definitely. And I'm excited to see him in the universe. So
yeah, it's certainly not cheesy. It's definitely.
I almost would have rather seen him as the antagonist in Suicide Squad, Like, I would have liked to see him be the version 1.0 of Suicide Squad, the one that got away. And Amanda Waller, that's the team, is supposed to go get him and bring him back type of deal.
That might have actually been a good movie.
that's not a good idea. Another little headline here. Robert Kirkman wants to change the Walking Dead comics for the TV show.
Speaking of horrible headlines.
Right. Right.
Because really all it was the producer saying that every time he's wanted to go more in line with the comics, Robert's been, no, let's go away from the comics.
Yeah, from day one they've done that, yeah.
Exactly. And the headline's a little misleading, yeah. Because it makes it seem like it's a big, huge change deal. And it's Robert Kirkman trying to satisfy two sets of audiences and doing it well, I think, because he's got, when you do the TV show, you've got people that have never read a Walking Dead comic, so they don't know what they're getting. And then you have the other people that have read Walking Dead comics and they still don't know what they're getting. And I think they're crushing it with that method.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. I didn't agree with some of the changes. And it was enough to, with timing of life, not because of the show or anything, but with timing of life is enough to throw me off and not go, oh, I've got to force myself, you know, make time to watch the show. So I've actually gotten out of the show for a while. I just really enjoyed what he did with the books, and I knew they were kind of diverging. And I knew that Kirkman was driving that divergence from the path. I just, as far as they kept taking it, I was like, I really like what they did with the books. I'm not really liking what they're doing with the show. And that's just a personal thing.
Yeah, I love the show. I love the show and the comics equally. And I'll tell you what, my money for when this season comes back from the break, Rosita's dead. I'm calling it.
I don't watch the show, but I kind of feel like there's listeners out there screaming, spoilers, man, even though you're just guessing.
I'm just guessing, yeah.
Yeah, nope. I was like, all right, stay tuned. We got one last thing to talk about before we get out of here. So how about you listen to this quick ad for us, and we'd appreciate you. All right, last headline. This one came up right at the last moment, and I wanted to hit it, even though we're going a little bit long today, because I like the question. The question is, would Suicide Squad have been a better TV show? I don't care about the article, although we'll link the article. You can read it yourself. I'm not worried about talking about the article. I want us to discuss that question. Do you think Suicide Squad would have been a better TV show than a movie?
In the Berlantiverse? Yes. Outside of that? I don't know.
I can see it going to HBO or Netflix and being able to go as a TV show, you can go more minute details and build the story more and dive into that character. I mean, they did great character development. I think we all agreed that the character development was decent. There were definitely flaws in the storytelling.
No, I think we agreed that the character development was decent for a couple of characters.
Yeah, for a couple characters.
That was the problem.
I'm about to put your boy toy back on the shelf, boy.
Can you please stop calling me a boy toy? You're making me a little uncomfortable, Bruce. okay, so real talk time.
Yeah.
In the time since we did our panel for that film, where I gave it about a 3 to 3.5 out of 5.
Yeah. Oh, he's taking it back.
I'm backsliding a little bit here because I really, the more I've thought about it and the more I've looked at some of the criticism that people have raised, that really was such a chop job. And yeah, I don't know, man. Like, that take on it, like the non-story that was there, for one thing, was a real problem for me now. The more I've thought about it and just how ridiculous the whole thing is, I kind of feel like maybe on a TV show they would have had time to actually do everything that they wanted to do.
Yeah, maybe.
So there might be some validity to that. Mm. I mean, what's to stop them from doing like a Netflix thing? I mean, Netflix can't have an exclusivity contract with Marvel.
No, Netflix wouldn't want one, I wouldn't think.
I wouldn't think so.
But CW owns DC, right?
No.
CW's part of the parent company, Warner Brothers, which owns.
Okay. Yeah. Well, okay. So, all right. There you go. It's still an in-house connection.
Right.
Right. So I'm open to a Suicide Squad television show. Obviously, they're going to have to recast half of it, though, because those people aren't going to want to do TV.
You never know. I mean, you're probably right. You're probably right, but you never know. Sometimes
Well, Will Smith is not going to do a television show anymore.
Been there, done that. But he's just, Jazz might be available.
Jazz Jeff.
You know, this raises... That was a great joke, but moving on. This raises another conversation. I actually just saw some information. Apparently, this has been a really rough summer for studios with films. A lot of tentpole films have just failed outright, including Suicide Squad. And a lot of the smaller stuff, the stuff that should get a little bit of a trickle, has bombed completely. In particular, I saw an interview with Andy Samberg about Popstar and how that just bombed.
What was that, $10 million?
Yeah, it was bad. And, you know, he talked about the fact, he's like, I just don't see people going to the theater, you know, this year like they did in the past. And that's true.
Yeah.
Though, ironically, that being said, this year is apparently on target to be like the second highest grossing summer in movie history. But I think part of that is buoyed by Civil War and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Like,
and BBS, Civil War. IMAX sales too.
Yep.
Because this year I think was top. And well, wasn't it? It was Civil War, wasn't it? That had like the highest gross, the highest pre-sales and first day sales of any.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, something that was pretty good.
You know,
I've kind of breached this subject a little bit in the past. I know we don't have a ton of time to talk about it here, but I really do think that the reality is that the traditional movie format is not enough time to tell these stories, particularly these heavy, you know, how to put it, like fandom type stuff, like comic books, sci-fi. I don't think a movie film is the best format for the kind of storytelling that you want to accomplish in those. And so I think it's time for studios and people to realize that and kind of align under a different model and like really push to keep doing stuff like Daredevil.
I agree with that, but I'm going to caveat that is if you do it the Marvel, and I understand that whatever property it is that you're trying to do, you're already 10 plus years behind Marvel, or close to 10 years behind Marvel on this, but that's how they were successful, because they had those movies leading up to the team movie.
And what I will say in response to that real quick, I don't mean to cut you off.
No, you're good.
You're right. However, it is those movies that have changed the game.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Like, it's that whole example of, like, somebody blazing the trail, but they've completely distorted the path. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, they basically, the Marvel films have basically burned everything in their wake, being as meteoric as they are. You know, like, they're wildly successful. They generate a ton of money. But I've seen lots of people come out and speak ill about them in the industry because of what it's done. It's completely ravaged the landscape for other films to get made. An indie flick almost has no legs anymore, and anything that's not a major tentpole that can't try to compete with these Marvel tentpoles, for example, they barely get a chance. You know, big budget movies are in serious jeopardy.
Well, you get such an oversaturation of films hitting at one time. Combine that with the great quality we get with Hulu originals, Netflix originals, Amazon originals. You know, you get amazing and HBO stuff, obviously.
The technology itself as well. I mean, you know, like you said, MCU's had about a 10-year lead here, but technology has changed in that 10 years. 10 years ago, it wasn't as easy to stream. It wasn't as easy to download. Those things existed at the time, but not like they do now. You know, like everybody has a Netflix account. Like grandparents and parents and people older than any of us in this call, you know, like have Netflix accounts and they watch it all the time. Like that is monumental. I mean, I really do think like the whole Netflix boom is on par with the color TV, like, you know, having infiltrated so many homes. You know, it's on par with the PC boom, like where almost every home has some form of computer device now. You know what I mean? With access to high speed internet, it's a revolution, and it's firmly entrenched. You know what I mean? And that's something I think we need to be aware of.
The the problem with changing it to television that I see, and it's not a problem for us, it's a problem for the studios. It's for them to put the amount of faith in that television project to pay for the actors that they want to put in there, because they're not going to get that immediate paycheck back like they would with a big blockbuster movie. They're not going to see those immediate returns with a Netflix series. And when your end goal is to do a season or two of television and then move it to the big screen, if you're wanting the people to follow you from Netflix to the big screen, you can't all of a sudden change the actors. So do you put in relative unknowns or the BC list characters and hope that they can carry your project that you're soaking all this money and time and development into? Or do you sink the costs at the beginning, get that A-list actor, and then still hope, so you still have those worries that it carries to that blockbuster?
Well, that's kind of like, you're right, but also that's kind of the thing that's going on, is a lot of these bigger budget films are tanking so hard lately that you know, that risk is already there. You know what I'm saying?
Like, right. Yeah.
It's already the reality. You know, you look at a lot of the action movies that have come out in the last couple of years that had, you know, big A-list stars in them that weren't a tentpole that got supported en masse have colossally failed. And it's, and a lot of that is, it's exasperated by the fact that their production cost is so high when you put an A-list actor on it. You know what I mean?
Well, but they could shore up that by reducing their advertising, because that's where the bulk of that money comes
from.
They
could. Well, I mean, I think there's two issues going on with big studio film production. They are spending way too much money on advertising. I agree with you there. And that advertising is very often, you know, misallocated. It's just not. Mm-hmm. I actually have a great example of that I want to bring up in a second. But the other thing is, they are paying actors too much. I'm sorry, but like, and when you look at like what Robert Downey Jr. made for you know, the recent Marvel films, that is, who needs that much money? I mean, yeah. I'm not trying to be anti-capitalist here or anything, and I know these people work really hard, but we're talking about multi-million dollars every time you make a film. That seems absurd to me. And when you find out that that's a big chunk of the budget, you know, you look at a relatively small action film that's on a shoestring budget. A good example is Don't Breathe, the horror movie that's out right now. That movie was made on $10 million. And there's a relatively popular actor in it, but he's not, you know, he's not A-list.
I was going to say not Cable.
you know, and that's the thing. That movie, it's a quote-unquote indie film, and it's crushing right now.
Yeah,
because it's apparently very well done. People like it. People have gone out to see it, but it had a $10 million budget. That's fantastic. You know, that's so easy to recoup. You're actually pretty much, the moment you put that movie in a theater, in you know, nationwide and worldwide, you're going to recoup that money almost no matter what. And a lot of these movies that get reported as flops actually end up making money in the long run. It's just by the time it gets to Blu-ray and DVD and digital distribution and so on and so forth, it takes them a while. Like you were saying, Chris, it takes some time to recoup. But a lot of these movies do end up being profitable. It's just not in the box office. A lot of these studios are looking for that big cash grab.
Exactly. And I don't have a problem with the slow play from Netflix to TV. I'm behind that 100%. I would love to see that. But from the studio perspective, you're asking them to put a lot of faith in those and try to figure out the math and how it's going to work now. Because it's like you said, I mean, there's a complete paradigm shift that they're going to have to get you. Whichever studio comes first to market with making that work, they're the ones that are going to own the future.
Now, I said I had something else to bring up real quick here.
All right, make it quick.
Advertising. What?
Make it quick.
Okay. There's a perfect example of misallocated advertising out right now. It's called Kubo and the Two Strings, which I saw the other day, and it was fantastic.
That looks great.
Well, here's the thing. I wanted to go see that movie because I saw the trailer before a movie a couple months ago, where they advertised it, and it looked phenomenal. And the trailer that I saw in the movie theater captured the ambiance and the theme of the story and represented it as what it was when I went and saw it. And I was in Reddit/movies the other day, and there was a big thread about how it was bombing because it did not do very well over the weekend. And the big reason why it was doing so poorly is because of the TV spots that have been put out there for it. And a lot of them aired during the Olympics. They spent a lot of money on that movie to advertise it during the Olympics. The TV spots presented it as just another animated movie. Like, just, they presented it as a goofy comedy. It's not.
It's the film's made by Leica, the company that made Coraline and the Box Trolls and films like that. First of all, it's an incredible artistic achievement. It's stop motion animation. It's beautiful. It doesn't look like it's stop motion, but it is. If you know what to look for, you can tell. And at the end of the film, they show like their animatronics and articulation as to how they do some of the bigger set pieces and stuff with the stop motion. And that stop motion takes a lot of time and commitment, and it takes a lot of delicate touch to make it look great. And that film, that was a fantastic film, by the way. It's one of the best of the year, in my opinion. Certainly one of the best quote-unquote children/animated films I've seen in a long time.
I've seen several people putting it in their top ever list, nice. Like top five lists. And
but
stuff,
it is so. Not being accurately represented in the TV spots. They represent it as like kind of like another Shrek or something, and it's not that at all. It's actually kind of a dark, melancholic film.
Wow.
But it's got a beautiful message, and it's got a beautiful artistic journey. And it's in the end, you laugh a few times and you have a good time, and you walk out of it like feeling a little bit like, wow, what just happened? I just went into a kid's movie and now I'm having an existential crisis. but it's a fantastic movie. Folks out there, please, if you go see it, please go support that movie. Because my big concern is like, those types of films don't get made if they don't make money, and they take a long time to make. I think it was quoted someplace that it takes for 3 seconds of footage, it takes them a week with the stop motion of work. That's insane.
A lot of work.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah.
But yeah, and so I think that's happening a lot nowadays. We talked about very recently. We talked about what was the other film we just talked about recently? That was done the same way. The way it was advertised was not the way the movie panned out.
Well, Suicide Squad.
Suicide Squad is one example, but there's been a couple other ones where the advertising just doesn't hit the note.
Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters, that's the one. Where that advertising was so bad. You know, those two trailers were so not representative of what you got when you sat down in the theater. Now, I'm not saying that Ghostbusters deserved to be a blockbuster sellout movie. It definitely didn't. It was definitely like, you know, B caliber, but it was fun. It was a good time, and it was definitely worth making, I guess. I say I guess kind of begrudgingly. I had a good time, but it didn't blow me away like the original Ghostbusters blew everybody away when it came out. It didn't blow me away like a number of other films have in recent years where I was like, oh my God, that was awesome. I didn't walk out of it like high-fiving all the bros around me. You know, because we all hate women. But it was misrepresented by the advertising. And I think that's a big thing. These studios are spending a boatload of money on ineffective advertising because it does not represent what they're putting in the theater. And I think that's a shame. And I think that's where they can improve.
Absolutely. Dude, that's a whole nother topic. We just need to go to Hollywood and like stop wasting money on the marketing. That sucks. But yeah. All right. So you can find us on iTunes, Breaking the Panel on iTunes. You can find us on Twitter at Panel Breakers. Facebook is facebook.com/Breaking the Panel. And you can email us btp@gmail.com. Tune in next week to hear me reference Barbie and Ken and introducing Chris and Paul. We'll be back to play with more boy toys.
Breaking the Panel is the flagship podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel, and you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at giantsizeteamup.com.